Welcome to Parents Perspective. I think I'm going to lose my mind any day now, 8-year-old Megan's teacher sank into a tattered armchair in the teacher's lounge with a sigh. Megan again, right? Her friend Carla looked up from a stack of her students' spelling tests. Oh, dear, chimed in Marion from across the room. I had her last year. I know what you mean. She's a lovely child, but... Well, Megan's teacher began, staring into her coffee cup. She just seems to be set off by everything. This morning she couldn't find her pencil case. First she began to cry in frustration. Then she decided Annabelle had hidden it and picked a fight with her. She's constantly on edge, and I just can't seem to get her to calm down and pay attention to schoolwork. Yep, offered Marion. She was like that all last year. I talked to her folks, and they couldn't find any reason from home for this behavior. It almost sounds, said Carla, like you have a teenager in among your third graders. You know, mused Ben, the sixth grade science teacher, I've heard of a kind of exercise program that seems to have good results for kids with trouble focusing. I think it's called Brain Gym. Maybe something like that's worth running by this kid's parents. At this point, Megan's teacher replied, I'm open to just about anything. Where do you think I can find out about this Brain Gym program? From a parent's perspective, what should we know about the connection between movement and learning, and how can we use that information to help our children? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Today's guest is just the expert these teachers and parents were looking for. Mary Rentschler is an educational therapist helping kids achieve more efficient learning and optimum performance. She works with what is termed educational kinesiology. Mary is also the mother of two grown sons. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, Mary.
Thank you.
When we talk about academic learning, usually we don't focus on physical activity, but your work with children is all about that connection. Why is the connection so important?
Physical activity and the integration of motor control is the real basis on which higher-level cognitive skills rest. And without the integration of these more basic skills, children will have a hard time with the more complicated tasks such as reading and thinking and remembering.
Is that why little children, when they first learn, are so tactile? They put things in their mouth. They need to use large muscles. They play with blocks.
That's right.
Textures are important and so forth.
They're building a whole array of ground-level support for the higher skills that will come later on.
When my children were very young, people used to say to me, it's very important that they learn how to crawl.
Crawling is crucial. One of the key Brain Gym activities we call cross-crawl, and it simply looks like standing in place, marching, only as the left knee comes up, we touch it with the right elbow, and as the right knee comes up, we touch it with the left elbow or hand.
Why is that significant?
Well, when you realize that the right hemisphere of the brain controls the left side of the body, and the left hemisphere controls the right side of the body, if I do a kind of one-sided movement and lift up the right leg and the right arm at the same time, I'm only using one hemisphere. If I lift up the other side at the same time, I'm only using the other hemisphere. And we can use them like that, one at a time. But since these two hemispheres have very different gifts and represent different resources for us, in reading, for example, we use the left hemisphere for the decoding part of it, the technical part. The right hemisphere gives us access to our memories and associations and everything that makes what we read meaningful and worth remembering. So if I do this cross-crawl motion, I'm activating both hemispheres at the same time. And if I do it right before the reading lesson, then I go into the lesson actually with energy in both parts of my brain, and so I can read with the whole brain instead of part of it.
It's sort of like warm-ups before a game, mm-hmm. Huh?
I often use that analogy. You know, I tell children that I work with that an athlete wouldn't dream of suiting up and going out on the field to begin a championship match without getting ready first. And same thing with us, you know, before homework, before a test, before anything we want to do that's important where we want to be at our best, let's get ready, get the brain ready so we have access to all the parts of it. Because we know that under stress, we all have the experience of functioning less efficiently when we're under stress. So the stress might not be extreme. It might not be for a child the kind of stress that makes them cry and run away. But still, a challenge of a new unit or open the new book that is at a higher level of reading ability, there's a little stress involved in that. And when the system has a kind of reflex to go into the stress response, then we kind of limit our resources and fall back on a sort of default setting. Lots of people talk about being right-brained or left-brained. You know, people say left-brained people are good at accounting and they're logical, make good lawyers. Right-brained people are dreamy and spontaneous and they make better artists. Well, under stress, the left-brained person tends to shut down the resources from the right hemisphere because that's where he's most comfortable. And under stress, the right-brained person shuts down the ability to analyze and think, you know. You ever had the experience of being nervous about something and not being able to think straight?
So this little girl in the story, for example, was obviously a very right-brained child who was under stress a lot of times and really shut down this other part so she couldn't focus on her schoolwork.
That's right. You know, we talk a lot about right and left hemispheres in the beginning of educating people about brain gym because that's where they have sort of something familiar to draw on. In our work in educational kinesiology, we also talk about the top of the brain and the bottom of the brain and the front and the back. And these parts of the brain all have different gifts for us, and we want to really have access to all of them.
If I had a child having difficulty with schoolwork, my first inclination would probably be to see if he were having physical problems that were interfering, like vision or hearing difficulties. How is this physical emphasis different than that?
Well, you need, of course, to be sure that there's not a problem with visual acuity or auditory acuity. But simply because a child has 20/20 vision or, I don't know how the numbers work for hearing, but adequate hearing, doesn't mean that the more complex sensory processing is taking place the way we want it to. And it doesn't mean that he's actually using both eyes and both ears as a team all the time.
Which gets into developmental optometry and all kinds of
right.
things.
Right, yeah. So
to be a parent, you have to know an awful lot, don't you?
Oh, it's... I see these parents sometimes who've, you know, received a complex diagnosis for a child, and a few years after that, they sound like PhDs. they really study and do their homework.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion with educational therapist Mary Rentschler about movement and learning.
Two excellent books written by hosts Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, Parents as Mentors and Washington, D.C. with Kids, are available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking with Mary Rentschler about the connection between movement and learning.
Mary, the Brain Gym program is concerned with the connection between three separate parts of the brain affecting three different kinds of intelligence. Would you please explain how that works?
Yeah. We talk about laterality, centering, and focus. Now, we've already talked about right and left a little bit right now, so I won't go into that too much except to say simply that we want to have access to both sides of the brain. When I sit down to read a book, I want to be able to do the decoding. And I want also to have access to my memories and associations so that what I read is meaningful. Otherwise, I won't want to remember it. It won't have any significance for me. So that's the right and the left. And you can see how that works in a subject like math as well. You know, a child who knows the answer right away is doing a kind of global processing, simultaneous processing, and he just knows the answer. Like lots of times we do know the answer for something. He's doing that with the right hemisphere. The left hemisphere needs to be there so he can show his work. You know, those dreadful teachers who say, show your work.
and step by step.
Step by step. You know, the left side of the brain is the side that is comfortable following steps, keeping within a structure, and getting all the details right. So it's the left side that enables you to have all those columns lined up and straight, and it's the right side that helps you with the word problems and knowing what to do. So that's the right and left. Then for the top and the bottom, we call that the centering dimension. And there, the child that you described in your little story at the beginning, who's all in pieces, you know, you can look a little bit at the language that we use to describe a child's behavior. And if you say that this kid is driving me nuts, she's all over the place, or she's beside herself, or she's all in pieces, what kind of a picture do you get? You get a picture that way of something that's not holding to its center. And we call this the centering dimension. And it's about knowing where I am and being secure about how I'm here and what my relationship is to other things. I'm here and you're in front of me, a little to my right, you're in front of me, a little to my left, and so forth. So I know where I am and where I stand. Knowing that helps me to place letters on the page, actually. You know, children whose handwriting early on is all disorganized, and some letters big, some little, and who starts the sentence way over to the right side of the page is not integrated in the centering dimension. And it has to do with integrating not the left and the right hemispheres, but the top of the brain, the cortex that we use for rational thought, and the limbic system, which is the emotional brain, the one that responds at a sort of nonverbal and more primitive level. But we want access to that because memory is there in that part of the brain. The right hemisphere has more connections with this limbic brain than the left one does. So that these dimensions sort of flow into each other a bit. But to be integrated in centering dimension means that I can be aware of my feelings and feel them profoundly, but not get flooded with them and overwhelmed, so that I'm able to act on them in an appropriate way. So a child who's not integrated in the centering dimension, under stress, will either completely shut down feelings and not have any access to his emotions and say, "How are you?" "Fine, I'm fine." And you know that, and get stony and logical and have a lot of words. Whereas the right brain dominant child under stress is going to crumble and be so flooded with feelings that she'll be crying or getting into a fight and not able to regulate. Well, we want both.
It sounds a little bit like centering comes with a kind of developmental progress, because it sounds like two-year-olds are very right-brained, for example. And so is this a physiological process that also happens?
Well, of course. Of course. The control centers are all things that develop as we get socialized. But they are also all dependent on having a firm basis in interpreting what our senses are bringing to us. And that brings us to the third dimension, focus dimension, which is so key for attention deficit disorder we hear so much about these days. So the focus dimension, we're talking about the front and the back of the brain. The back is the primitive, we call it the reptilian brain, the one that is going to be there to save us in a life or death situation. And it acts with absolutely no thinking, no involvement of the higher levels of the cortex. It's purely on reflex. So I want that reptilian brain to be there when I'm not looking which way and I cross the street at the wrong time and the horn blows. I don't want to think, oh, which way shall I go? You know, that sounds like I should get out of the way. I don't want to be thinking about it and making a decision. I want my body to just go and save me. And it will, usually. But I don't want to have all my energy in that part of the brain when I'm in the classroom and the teacher walks in. Then I want to be up in the front, in the frontal lobes, where we have our ability to think about a situation and to act intentionally and to have a goal in the future. That's very different from the kind of reflex so the balance of those two is very important as well.
Sounds like there's an awful lot that has to be done in this poor little brain of a child.
Our brains have to work very hard.
Fortunately, it's not difficult.
What kinds of students do you find benefit from the brain gym activities you described, and how can we tell if we need to access this kind of help?
The simple answer to that question is everyone. Everyone benefits, not just students, but parents and teachers, administrators. There isn't anyone who can't benefit. Show me someone who doesn't have stress in his life or her life. That's the person who doesn't need brain gym.
Sounds pretty pervasive.
However, that's not, I mean, to answer your question, I can tell you that oftentimes I see a child who's having a slight problem and yet who really has everything in place and has basically the developmental milestones have been passed or in all in place really well. The child has a secure home and is stable in every other part of her life. There's just a little glitch somewhere. And sometimes with a child like that, a little intervention with brain gym seems like a miracle. I mean, you just get a breakthrough that in the space of a very short time, the problem is solved. I saw a little boy not too long ago who was in second grade and had been doing well, but, you know, it gets more difficult month by month and year by year. And by the end of second grade, there's some challenges there that weren't there in first grade and early second grade. And he was, you know, his ability was breaking down a little bit and he was having trouble reading. So I worked with him very briefly, and I think a brain gym practitioner, after a time, you begin to be sensitive to behaviors and patterns that can tell you where the issue is. And it seemed clear to me that there was something going on that was an auditory issue for this little boy. So we did some brain gym exercises that are aimed at stimulating the auditory functions. And I could probably like an example. One of them is simply massaging the ears. And we take a hold of the top of the ear, and, you know, there's that little fold that goes around all the way. And we just, with the thumb, with the fingers behind the ear and the thumb in front, kind of unfold it and go all the way around the ear like that.
And what does that do?
And, well, it's...
Besides look interesting.
It feels good. Those kids like it. And we do it enough so that your ears get sort of red and warm and tingly. And you're bringing a lot of stimulation in there to, of course, the auditory system and auditory processing. Also, the vestibular system is in there. The vestibular system is what has to do with balance. And this is key in hyperactivity. The kids who are squirming in their chairs, tipping their chairs back on the hind legs and driving the teachers nuts, they need stimulation to this vestibular system. That's where the semicircular canals are, with fluid in them that as our head moves back and forth like this, the fluid touches little hairs inside those canals, and it's part of the feedback system that lets us know whether we're sitting up straight or whether we're about to fall over, and balance is in that. And when it's working automatically, then we can sit still because all the little micro adjustments that we make can happen automatically. When it's not working, then we fall over and we have to squirm and get back into position, and that's distracting.
I wish our listeners could see how you move around, because you're very good at demonstrating all this motion.
So these hyperactive kids are kids who are needing to stimulate the system so that they can get the right information that a lot of us get just by sitting still?
That's right, because for them, it takes concentration and effort to hold still. And they're constantly being told, hold still and pay attention. Well, a hyperactive kid can hold still or pay attention. It's not, he's not capable. So it would be better for him, since he needs the stimulation, to sit maybe on one of those physio balls or sit on a kind of cushion that enables the pelvis to move a little bit and let him squirm. And when he's really frustrated, instead of saying, hold still and pay attention, say, you're frustrated. You need a break. You know, let's get up and move around. Let's maybe do some brain gym activities that are going to get some energy into all the parts of your brain and make it easier for you to do this piece of homework when you sit back down again.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion with educational therapist Mary Rentschler about movement and learning.
For an audio cassette copy of any Parent's Perspective show, send a check or money order for $5 with your name, address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Mary Rentschler about the connection between movement and learning.
Now, one of my sons used to do his schoolwork with his head cocked so far to one side, I thought he was going to have neck cramps. What's significant about a child's physical positioning when he begins to do work?
It's very significant. And brain gym practitioner looking at a child like that would know immediately what's going on. Oftentimes I see children who write with their heads down, practically lying on the desk, and the line of writing comes out straight from their noses like that. And you know when you see that kind of posture that that child is only using one side of his brain, because the eye that's down toward the desk is virtually not in use. So if the child, say, is lying down with the left side of the head down, you know he's using only the right eye, and he's not crossing the visual midline. Mm. And this is what's so important to do, both with the eyes and the hand, to cross the midline of the body and to cross from the visual field of the right hemisphere into the visual field of the left hemisphere, going back and forth, back and forth. That gets the two eyes working together as a team, and both the brains being stimulated with information, and so both of them alert and contributing to the task.
Everybody who's listening is going to now go look at their children and see how they're
watch
sitting.
What their position is, that's right. Would you give us some other examples of the kinds of exercises? Sandy and I are sitting here doing this thing to our ears that you just told us about. What other kinds of exercises could you describe?
Well, I can tell you four exercises that we call PACE, getting into PACE, which are wonderful to do as a warm-up, like you were talking earlier about. It's a good idea to warm up before we do anything important. And teachers who introduce PACE in school just as a transitional activity between recess and starting up academics again, or in the morning after the kids are all off the bus and everything to settle down and get ready for the day's work, find that it has a really can have a profound effect on the classroom. So the first one is to drink water. Now, water is really important for the brain, and that is a brain gym exercise. Drink some water. Of course, water is a great conductor of electricity, and everything we do in our brains is an electrochemical event. So we want to be adequately hydrated so that the messages, the electrical messages that our brain is sending down to our muscles are traveling with great efficiency.
Gee, it makes me worry about our activities in a thunderstorm.
Well, if you just drink water, you don't have to drown in it, just a few sips or, you know, off and on all day. That helps the brain right away. So that's the first one in PACE. The second one is to stimulate what we call brain buttons. And the brain buttons are just below the collarbone to the right and left of the sternum. So if you use the thumb and the index finger of one hand and put it up, find your collarbone and go just a little bit underneath it and just give them a nice rub. And at the same time, put your other hand on your belly button.
Just like to rub the stomach
and
pat
the
head.
Hard. I don't know.
You don't have to do anything with the hand on the belly button, just is there. There's two explanations of this, both true. These spots are just over the carotid artery, which is sending a supply of freshly oxygenated blood from the lungs up to the frontal lobes of the brain. We talked about that earlier. We want to have energy in the frontal lobes of the brain to act intentionally. And, of course, the hand on the belly button brings attention to our center of gravity, activates the vestibular system, which is also involved in something called the reticular activating system, which gives us our ability to hold still and be alert at the same time. It's been studied in cats. You know how cats can be holding still outside of a mouse hole and paying such attention. And, you know, I always describe the state we want to be in as similar to a cat outside of a mouse hole, because it's dynamic and alert and it's calm at the same time. You know, the cat does not have every muscle tensed, ready to spring, otherwise he wouldn't be able to wait there for very long. But he's not falling asleep either. So he's relaxed and alert. It's the ideal situation to be in for learning. So that the reticular activating system is what enables us to do that, and we stimulate it with this. Then the next brain gym is called cross crawl. We talked about that already, marching in place, get both hemispheres revved up. And the last one is called hookups. And this is really an attitude enhancer. And it's very calming and wonderful. So what you do is cross your ankles and then look and see, just do it without thinking, and look and see which leg is on top. When I do it, my left leg is always on top. So then I put my arms out, thumbs down. Stretch your arms out in front of you, thumbs down. And whichever leg is on top, put that arm over the top. Then your hands are sort of like clapping each other. You lace your fingers together and bring them down and around. So you're like hugging yourself with your hands crossed over your chest. And while you're doing that, just listen to your breath.
I am so glad this is not television.
You should see. We're doing it. We should be very alert, right?
Our listeners, of course, who can't do all these exercises as we're doing right now, will want to know much more about movement and learning. What kinds of resources can you suggest?
Well, number one, go to the Brain Gym website, www.braingym.org. They have a really wonderful website that's linked to their bookstore, which is samething.com. And I would recommend people who are interested in knowing more to go to the FAQs, the frequently asked questions at the website. There's a lot of information there. There's also a list of all the instructors, a way to find who practitioners are all over the world.
Okay,
Brain Gym is widely practiced all over the world.
So the parents who want to have their child enrolled in some kind of a program like this. Is there also a situation where school districts could train teachers to do some of this, some of these exercises that you were
Absolutely.
Talking about?
Absolutely. I teach Brain Gym classes for educators, and I get a lot of OTs in my classes. They find
OT
it really
means occupational
therapists. Therapists and other kinds of therapists and PE teachers, all kinds of people, and parents. A lot of parents come to get Brain Gym training, too.
Sounds good. If this could help us be more alert, this sounds very good. We certainly appreciate Mary Rentschler's help in understanding the connection between movement and learning, so thank you so much for joining us, Mary.
Thanks for inviting me.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our book, Washington, D.C. with Kids. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573, and mention show number 171. Tell us, if you can, what station you are listening to. Since we're airing all over the world, it's always fun to know what station you're tuning into. Parents as Mentors and Washington, D.C. with Kids are both available at all major bookstores and on the web.
To learn more about Parents' Perspective and our books Parents as Mentors and Washington, D.C. with Kids, visit our website, http://i.am/parentsperspective. That's http://i.am/parentsperspective. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Today's program was made possible with generous support from Bonneville International and The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.